Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode one of the Business of Buildings podcast, the Bob podcast. Now, who is Bob? Well, Bob is a collection of passionate professionals inspired for positive change in architecture, engineering, and construction. I'm your host, Jeff Froster, team leader at Froster Engineering and founder of Bob. Today's guest, I'm pretty excited for. Frank O'Dowd and I have talked for years about doing something like this for the industry. He's project manager with Axis Plumbing. We decided to focus on the topic of scope and accountability. So I hope you enjoy.
I bought a property with a friend in Arizona 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the economy collapsed 2006 when I was overseas in New Zealand.
GFC.
GFC hit. Mm-hmm. So I'm like traveling in Melbourne and have no money. Oh, great. And he emails me saying, oh, we need to send money over. And I'm like, oh shit, I have to beg my mom for a couple of grand. Mm-hmm. I still remember my first paycheck, I bought a guitar in Melbourne because it was on sale.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so it collapsed. It went from 130 grand down to like nothing, 1 to 30. You couldn't sell it. And it's been this climb over the last 14 years. Mm-hmm. We're both married, kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ireland had something very similar.
Yeah, you had the same thing. Yeah. The drops, yeah. You've experienced it. Yeah. Like things, it's worth nothing. After.
Terrible. Families with houses and mortgages now worth half of the house, not worth half of what they actually, their mortgage is. Uh-huh. And I've witnessed that firsthand. My sisters and brother both got mortgages in the boom.
Yeah.
And now, their houses are worth half of what their mortgage is.
So you know what actually happens. There's no magic. It's reality.
Yeah, that's right.
The Australian market doesn't know that it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we waited for to get back, and then the air conditioning goes, and then his wife emails me saying $7,000 replace. How are we going to pay for it? Right when we're doing a kitchen renovation here, it's always at the worst time.
And, what's the saying? It's when it rains, it pours, isn't it?
Yeah. But then I got an agent. Ironically, this lady Anne from England, she's brilliant. I just found a local real estate agent through Yelp, and because she's living overseas, expat. Kind of relates to our scenario. Mm-hmm. She was brilliant. She furnished it. We had this dodgy tenant that had it messed up the place. Mm-hmm. And she got us top dollar.
Yeah, right.
At 175, which is like, we were very lucky to get that. Mm-hmm. A lot of effort, paperwork, going to FedEx, signing, all this stuff, dealing with tax. And
is it more hassle than what it's worth? I mean, in hindsight, would you invest in property?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people are in that
sense. I joke it's like forced savings. We're not real estate moguls.
Mm, mm. I think the days of benefits in property investment are gone.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
And she's there. She's like,
unless you've got a big portfolio. Unless you've got a very large portfolio and you're doing a lot of tax write-offs and so on and so forth.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. That's exactly, everyone needs to hunker down, pay off what they have. Mm. Don't get greedy.
Yeah.
But long story short, I'm like, we finally sell it. It clears. Money's in the account. It goes to him because it's for tax. It's easier to. And I'm just on WhatsApp just saying, look, okay, what's the split? I know you've contributed this. Let's figure it out. But that I wasn't wanting to call just to talk about that. Mm-hmm. He's a good friend. He's a fraternity brother. I'm not worried about that. Mm-hmm. But it was can we just call and say congratulations? Like, man, this is great. Mm-hmm. And I've been texting like nonstop. Are you free? When are you available? I call. It's like, oh, I'm on a business trip. He's got two boys, two kids. I've got two girls. Mm-hmm. I have a business.
Yeah, life is busy.
For something just like for that long time, you can't sit down and. Say hello. Let's talk. Like say, let's say, great job. Let's have a laugh about it. Mm-hmm.
So was that recently? Or?
That's recent. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's like talking about these job issues. That's another one. It just seems a lot of hard work. Mm. Everyone's spun.
I think a lot of stuff gets lost in translation.
In text.
Yeah. I mean, precisely what you're just talking about there, with regards to sitting down and having a conversation, as opposed to. Numerous correspondence, communicating through third parties, instead of just sitting down and have a 20-minute conversation with the two parties involved.
Yeah.
And solve the problem.
Yeah. How long have you been in the field, in the engineering?
I've been in the services industry for 24 years.
24 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, geez, that's a long.
Yeah.
I started 2005.
Yeah.
Actually, no, 99, sorry. That's 2004 is when I moved.
Sorry, actually, I started my apprenticeship in 99.
You did too. So, yeah, same.
So yeah, same. So what would that be? 20.
Yeah, 20. Yeah. It's getting there.
20 years.
20 years. It's a bit sad.
Yeah. We're older than what we think, aren't we? You know.
But at my first company, I worked at a small firm where I remember it was during the early days of the internet. There was one machine you can go to and you can dial in.
But the job.
The CAD drafter would always go there at break and kind of play around.
Yeah, the job still got done, didn't it?
You had the phone next to you.
It took a little bit longer, but it always got done. I think this goes back to what we've discussed, numerous times previously. We've advanced so much in technology, especially in the building industry, but actually executing projects and so on and so forth has become more difficult for the people in the industry.
Yeah.
Even though we've got all this superior technology,
yeah,
as opposed to what we had 20 years ago.
Because the assumption is that an email is an instruction.
Right.
And also everyone's connected with their phones. That's another evolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you send an email, it's as if you're going to pick it up immediately and
act on
it.
That's right. Everything's instant.
You expect that feedback. Mm. I had a job recently where we were working on an upgrade, a very strategic logistic nightmare, like with occupied floors and tenants and trying to upgrade main base build systems,
mm-hmm,
you know, really challenging. I'm like, man, like, what? You're trying to think for everyone the best solution.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get an email from the electrical engineer, who we're like friends now. I kind of put my stance down, he asked me, where are my electrical loads for mechanical? That's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
There was no phone call. There was no hello.
Mm-hmm.
My name is this.
Mm-hmm.
I called him. I said, look, my name is Jeff. I'm working on this. This is where I'm at.
Yeah.
I appreciate a phone call next time.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more to the story than just what you're
the human element or the personal element in the industry is slowly becoming nullified, isn't it?
It is.
You know.
Yeah. And is that a societal?
I don't think it's as prevalent in society as it is in our industry, in the building services industry, but it's certainly something that's creeping in, with the evolution of social media.
Yeah.
It's certainly something I've noticed in my time in the industry.
Our industry is definitely affected by it. I was at a function last night talking to someone that was in the space of education and government. And she said silo. I'm like, whoa, let's talk about this. You know, does this happen in other fields? That's why I've gone to these other networking events, just to get perspective outside of our space.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she said, yeah, there is. There's a silo. And I said, oh, wait a minute. We're not immune to it anywhere else.
Mm.
This is scary.
Mm. Mm.
But I do agree, our industry is probably more siloed because of the nature of what's happening.
The nature of what's happening, it's very price driven as opposed to quality driven these days as well, which is unfortunately is part of the whole globalization process, and everything's become a lot more competitive, and like I said, it's just made everything it's made everything a lot more difficult to manage,
that's
because like we just said, the old days, there might be maybe the foreman had a phone in his office, and that was about the extent of it on a large project.
Yeah.
And now everybody's instantly connected. Even the guy on site can, he can get his email instantly.
Yeah, they connect.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, you get even the guys on site will be on Aconex. They'll have the Aconex app on their phone.
Yeah.
We can send stuff to the leading hands. It's just everything's streamlined.
I think.
Unfortunately, the expectations have also evolved
with
the technology.
That's brilliant. We're going to talk about scope and accountability.
That's correct.
Right? So, I mean, there's a number of examples of this. Because of the way we have the ability to communicate nowadays, accountability is really kind of lost because of it. Again,
it's lost or it's confused. It's confused.
Yeah.
It's very confusing. Obviously, we go to the... We've gone to this trend of design and construct, which is fine if that's a better outcome for all the parties, but it's very confusing with regards to who is accountable.
Yeah.
For what?
Yeah, I was talking to a mechanical contractor this morning, a lead engineer, on a job he's working on down south, this massive house. And one scope for mechanical is a D&C, mm-hmm. apparently. Mm-hmm. But it's actually, the contract says full dock.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of what happens now as well is because there's so many D&C type contracts in the market these days. Even if the client calls for 100% design at design stage, which is your traditional old method of doing things, which was I thought the best way. You still get D&C packages issued to all the to the builders and subcontractors just to cover themselves.
Yeah.
So if they've missed something, there's not necessarily a large common thing now. But like I said, I moved here 12 years ago.
Yeah.
So
yeah, same. We moved here around the same.
Yeah, thing. And I mean D&C packages weren't even that common 12 years ago in Australia.
So how do you define a true D&C? Like I've talked to.
That goes back to the point of what we're discussing. We don't.
A true D&C is that you have to build in a hurry and you're giving the builder design responsibility, mm-hmm. and you pay a premium for it. Mm-hmm. That's a D&C because there's higher risk with less design documentation. Mm-hmm. So as a developer, you're willing to pay more for it, mm-hmm. to get your timing right in the market.
Yeah.
But then what's happened from that, I don't know how it started. It's become a virus that's spreading where D&C is just thrown out like randomly.
Correct.
D&C. Okay, what is that? If you have one service that's a D&C on a project, the entire job becomes exposed.
That's right.
And it ultimately is the builder that's going to take that risk.
Yeah.
They're willing to do it.
Well, it's the builder takes the risk, but he passes off the risk associated with the particular service or subcontract package to the subcontractor.
To you.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because you go back, if the builder gets a D&C package from a client, he just passes on D&C packages to his various subcontractors. So basically you're back to back with his D&C responsibility.
They're spreading risk.
Correct. It's so spread, instead of the client having all the design risk, he has now spread the risk out across all the project team.
And this is where I have a problem with it, because the accountability we come back to, it's been completely disrupted. Now, it used to be the architect would lead it. Mm-hmm. The engineers used to full tender documentation. They would recommend contractors review. The tender would close with the engineer. Because mm-hmm. the engineer's fee is based off time and value, but it's not tied to the overall CapEx.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So you could have a $3 million mechanical system, but a $100,000 mechanical fee, mm-hmm. plus or minus. Mm-hmm. Your obligation is to the best result for the client.
Correct.
Your obligation isn't towards the cheapest outcome.
And unfortunately, I think that's what.
But a D&C will drive a builder down the lowest path.
A D&C will drive everybody down a cost saving
path. Yeah.
Yeah.
So accountability. Think about buildings are built for humans, for us.
Yeah.
The end user
is the loser.
End user is the loser, which is actually us. You and me.
That's right.
In the public, we pay taxes. We live in this state. And that's the disconnect that's happening here.
So I'm curious who's won along the whole process then?
Who's
because
won?
Because the builder has got a D&C package.
Yeah.
So obviously he's assumed overall design responsibility. All the subcontractors are on D&C packages, so they've all got design responsibility for that particular service, be it plumbing, mechanical, electrical. So where's the win?
The truth is no one wins. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to communicate this to a developer, because if you go deep, and I have examples of projects which I can, I'm going to be sending up some case studies on, where the building's compromised. It's known to be compromised. There's one example I'm thinking of which went D&C. Mm-hmm. There's some major compliance issues and health concerns with the building. Mm-hmm. And I've given the developer a clear report on how to fix it, mm-hmm. but I can see his stance on it. If he goes and resolves it, word's going to get out, and the value of that building is going to plummet. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he actually has an asset that is devalued. The public doesn't know it yet.
Yeah.
He got what you pay for. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what's missing. So the developer paid, he thinks he got a bargain, but he really didn't. And then the builder on that and the contractors are all squeezed down because they're trying to get bottom dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't actually win either. They have a job, but they're not making any margin.
Mm. There's a gray area as to what the job's going to cost.
Yeah.
So it was easy in the old days. You had a quite logical approach to a building. Like you said, the architect drove, the architects and engineers designed.
Yeah.
We drove towards, you know, as close to 100% design as what we could. And then you ended up with a design that your designers would actually police and make sure that it went in. Your builders and subcontractors would, to the best of their ability, ensure that the building got built to that design.
Yeah.
And everybody won. You got a good product because it was in the designer's interest to make sure that it was a good design because it was their design. And it goes back to accountability.
Exactly, that's right. There's a duty of care.
Correct.
That you apply to your field. That's another topic entirely. Scope and accountability.
Mm.
You deal with Victaulic in Germany. You've gone to Germany. You've done some
see stuff in Germany.
In Ireland, probably much the same. Like in Ireland, you have to have chartered engineers to sign off.
Yes.
For documentation, correct,
that's,
right?
That's correct, yeah.
In the U.S., the same thing. You have to have chartered, well, they call them PEs in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
three PEs on a board of directors for a firm, and then you have to have sign-off. Here in Australia, except for Queensland, you don't have to have a degree.
Mm.
You don't have to have an architectural license to sign off for a building permit, which for developers, the secondary aim. They want to first get DA approval, and then when they get a permit, the job has life.
Mm.
To get that piece of paper, you can have anyone sign it.
Mm. Mm.
And that disrupts the normal flow of the entire, that's the start of the lack of accountability.
Yeah.
Because if you go through university, you go through the hard yards, mm-hmm. You could have a guy over there or a lady that's smarter than you,
mm.
but when it comes down to duty of care and ethics and following procedure and policy, that to a client should think of that more as an insurance policy.
Yeah.
That they've proven themselves, they are going to do the right thing by me,
mm.
versus over here, maybe not.
Mm. It would seem to be common sense. I think my big question is what has driven the change. I mean, we talk about the good old days with, you know, the project got designed, and the project got delivered, in those steps. But what's driven the change now to the project got built and designed at the same time?
If you stem off a couple of words from accountability, you can talk about pride in your work,
mm.
you know, ethics, to some, like stretching it a bit,
mm.
but having like pride in what you do, trying to do the right thing, that's accountability in life back to you.
Mm.
And you see examples out there, we won't talk about, but why are those decisions being made to go the wrong way?
Mm.
Is it out of fear because you need to
I think program is a big one, isn't it? Because it takes time to lock down a design, doesn't it? Whereas they go, oh, well, we could have half this building built and you could be designing this other part. You know?
Yeah.
So to actually lock down a design, it takes a bit more time, doesn't it? You need that. You need that time at design stage.
That goes back to talk, you know, with responsiveness and having email and everyone's expecting more for less time.
Yeah.
And I've noticed there's a trend lately where, and this accountability, I always say it goes to the top. Whoever makes the decision to get that job going, they set the tone and the theme and the culture.
Yeah, it's just like any
other entire industry. Project.
Yeah, yeah.
But accountability ultimately never goes back to that decision maker. It's always pointing down the line, you know, because I think...
It's passing
the buck down instead of holding themselves accountable to it's not a negative, trying to improve. Okay, what could we have done better?
Mm.
How could we have improved this process?
Mm.
Instead of just passing the buck down. Because again, like I said, go back to the beginning, the developer, you get what you pay for. You're going to have a compromised building whether you know it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you are accountable.
Oh, you're running the risk of it anyway, at least, at the very least.
Yep. Yeah. And you're accountable for all these companies taking higher risk, losing money, and compromising to a point, even though they're accountable for their own decisions. In a market where you're trying to compete for work, when everyone else is doing it, what else can you do?
Mm.
Fallen, right?
I think that's the biggest problem. I mean, you know, if you, we went to this sort of DNC trend and it was a level playing field in the regard that everybody bidded based on knowledge of what's involved in designing and constructing a project. But the problem is these tenders go out and you have younger companies out there or startup companies out there that don't understand what it's actually, what it being a DNC contract means. And it ends, they don't realize what the additional cost is and what the additional risk is, and they don't allow for it. They just measure it off of this, is it, if it's a 50% design or whatever they is produced at design stage, goes back to our whole confusion of,
that's a brilliant point.
And they price it off those drawings.
We've talked about this before. Like, think about it. We've been here 12 years or so. When I start, you could, things have shifted dramatically. And I remember all the training I received, you received lots of mentorship. And I look at these young kids, they don't know any different in the market. They just, they don't know what a DNC is. And there's these clauses and specs that talk about onus goes to the contractor. So accountability, and it's not, it's for those engineers up and coming. If you're not held accountable, you're not really going to learn. You know, and you're not going to grow, and then the skill level of that community is going to suffer. So that's self-fulfilling to what's happening. It's only going to spiral more and more.
That's right, yeah.
It's, so I feel bad for those. I mean, that's why I put a lot of effort into these guys, because I've been there. I was a little shithead. I thought I know it all, but I don't. You have to be taught the right way. And that's scary for the public.
It is.
Because we're seeing it all over the shop now.
I think we'll get a, what will happen is we'll get a brain drain out of the industry. Because you know, you lose things like pride and, you know, accountability and, you know, people become less interested, you know, and they'll go and work in an industry where it's more rewarding, you know.
That's what a theme I've constantly come back to is we build for people, for us, but the last person you think about, the last, in everyone's, because everyone's so siloed and working on their little specialties, is really you don't think about the human element. It's all, it's a disconnect. But that's what we're doing it for in the end. I always look at a building, you may think this way or not, but I always look at it. I love architecture and all that. I'll go to Europe and you're like, oh, that's a beautiful looking building. I think they did it better back then.
But I think so.
I look here now and I look at buildings, I'm like, okay, I don't really have any joy in looking at it anymore. I just see, all I see is a bunch of relationships thrown in a washing machine and just nothing but confusion, like RFIs, variations. I just see it all when I look at it. It's a combination of relationships is what a building is.
So it's got, I think a lot of buildings now have, you know, you can tell that profit was the number one driver
on
the project, which is a shame.
It is a shame,
Because profit is a short term.
So how do you, how would you define scope? You know, what is a scope? Because that talk, you know, DNC, 20% DNC brief or 30%.
Yeah, but what sets what the tone is 20, and the scope. What is 20%?
It's subjective.
Of a building that's DNC.
I don't know.
It's contradictory.
I know.
Because you haven't, the building hasn't been designed.
Yeah.
You're going to design the building as you build it. But someone's going to give you 20% of that design before you build it. I don't know.
I'm going to go down to the cafe after this.
And that's how can you define a scope?
I'm going to go down to the cafe after, because for lunch. I'm going to ask her for a 20% sandwich.
That's right. And then she's not going to. She's
going to be like, get out of here. I don't have time for this.
It's crazy.
So what I want is some bread and some lettuce and a bit of cheese. But in the end, I'm going to get a shitty sandwich.
Exactly. And you're not going to be satisfied with it.
Yes, scope. I've seen it. I mean, I talked about this aged care before. We came in, we found a better concept for a project. Again, focus on the end user. In this case, the aged care, because my wife's grandfather, he's 94 now, he's on his last days. He's at Korean aged care. You know, she works in healthcare. You got to think about them. At that age, their sensitivity to temperature, it changes. Some one occupant might want it warm, the other wants it cold. You can't tell them how they want to occupy a space. So this design that went out, they have thermal zone. It's all two-pipe VRV for the en suites. So the patient, I don't want to say patients, but the occupants there, they're going to get one or the other. They're not going to have the ability to control their own comfort at mm-hmm. that time in their life. Mm-hmm. After they've lived a long and fruitful life, mm-hmm. they get a shitty little thing, right? And so we did a redesign. We made it three pipes so they can have simultaneous heating and cooling. And we did it in a way that it's more cost effective. But because of the confusion and the mix of it, and again, scope and accountability, mm-hmm. the original consultant is involved in that political game of, oh, we're on side, we've got to represent the client. And they're also trying to protect themselves mm-hmm. in their ego.
Instead of delivering a design that's better for the end user.
And that really tees me off. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not about me. I found a better solution, that's fine. In our space, you would know we never get a pat on the back. We're used mm-hmm. to it. Mm-hmm. It's just how it is. We don't need it. It's in, the reward is in doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're thinking about the end user and you realize now, because they pulled the pin on us, they're all confused, they don't know, they're going to go with the original. And the end user is going to not get the best solution. And no one else knows this. It's all dollar driven. It's time driven. Mm. It's program driven. And that's really sad. That's the public.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
That's our tax. That's our tax dollars at work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I always go back to that. Whoever did set that scope, really setting a client's goals, expectations, budget, on anything you do in life, it requires the most amount of effort and the most amount of thought. But typically what we're finding lately is that it's a piece of paper with very little thought. And then you're relying on the market to come up with something that they think is suitable, and that's more guesswork.
I guess the question is, how does it get fixed?
That's a good question. I would love the answer to that. The first thing you do is you hold qualifications to a higher standard.
That's step one.
That's step one. You have to have it. I mean, Engineers Australia is working on it. They're taking their time. Mandatory registration for a building permit, and also including architects.
Do we need some sort of a regulatory body to police how projects are actually designed?
We do. I mean, I've had meetings at the building commission. I've talked to those guys. I've given presentations. I brought up one example, and they don't have a lot of say. They kind of said, oh, try this, try that. I'm like, wait a minute, you're the building commission. You can't do anything about this? The answer is no, they can't. It has to come from the government. There has to be some regulatory reform. But again, we're not reinventing the wheel here. You go look overseas to UK, look at Ireland, look at the US.
Yeah.
There's a model there that works.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of effort to get there.
Yep. It's quite logical. It's quite logical way to do things.
Yeah.
So.
But that's the primary starter of it. And then that's going to take time to reverse the tide. Because again, we talk about those younger engineers that have lived with this. That skill set is already compromised. It's going to take a next generation. So it's not going to change in a hurry. It's only those clients that see it, that understand how to do it the right way, that can actually extract themselves from it and try to do the right thing.
It's going to create a whole new breed of engineers and architects and project managers, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going to change. We've completely changed the way that we do things.
Yeah.
The way that we deliver projects.
So what's your motivator for your space? Like, you're great at what you do, you're very motivated, you're very skilled and organized, you have your head on. What's your driver? Like, what do you see as your motivation?
My main driver is the end product, so to be able to look at something that you've delivered and be proud of it and know that it's beneficial for all parties involved. You know, that's my main driver. You know, look after the people around me, look after the people that help me deliver projects.
Yeah.
That's it, really. I mean, that's what it's all about at the end of the day. That's my main motivation.
So you get fulfillment from that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people go towards, they talk about happiness, but everyone really wants fulfillment in life.
Yeah, that's right.
In what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, my motivations are, coming from the US, I just think there's a better way. There's a way that's already been proven. Mm. But even on a global scale, it's not just Australia that's isolated. It's our industry in general. Mm-hmm. It might be a little bit more difficult here, mm-hmm. but the industry itself is not evolving like other industries. No.
Unfortunately, we're very susceptible to corporate greed as well.
Yeah.
And that compromises a lot of things in our industry. You know.
I mean, I'm not a tree hugger or anything, but you know, I went to uni. You hear all about global warming. It's been discussed for a while.
Yeah.
I can't say, you know, from what I'm looking at, it seems to be a reality.
It's definitely a reality. I don't know how anyone can.
How can you deny it, you know?
Global warming?
But where it connects to me is, you know, I do mechanical systems. We throw in air conditioning in.
Yeah.
It takes a big power draw, and yeah. It's like an artificial space,
yeah.
which is drying out the air and making it. Ironically, making it unhealthy, mm-hmm. but it's based. We're having to put it in because of the nature of construction with glazing and all this glass and throwing. I've seen more people in offices, higher density, which is all about controlling. Mm-hmm. You know, corporate structures to control and make more profit. Mm-hmm. But if global warming is an issue, and 40% of the energy consumption in every economy is buildings. We need to look at buildings.
Yeah.
We need to solve that.
Yeah.
Like the way things go now, like D&C, if everything's bottom dollar, there's no room for innovation.
Yeah.
How are you ever going to get to a carbon neutral scenario?
That's right.
That's kind of like, personally, I would love to go down that path and have experience and deliver, because that would be fulfilling. Mm. But now I'm thinking that's just pie in the sky stuff.
Yeah, it seems all the environmental obligations, yeah. you know, these days seems to be just a box that needs to be ticked.
Yeah.
You know, we need to do this just to comply with Green Star, and that's it.
It's a tick the box.
It's a tick the box. It's not, you know, let's do it because it's, you know, it's better for the environment.
Would you relate feedback to accountability?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you would.
You know, your child does something wrong, you have to say, look, no.
Yeah.
You, as a parent, you're actually accountable for that, and so is your child, you know? That's an important one. So feedback on a global scale is, wait a minute, God, yeah, like back to Green Star. What I always joke with, there's actually no difference between a Green Star building, really, and a normal, well-thought-out, well-engineered design. Mm. So why are we doing it? We're throwing money in it. It's more marketing speak.
Yeah.
That where that money can actually be going to the design team with enough time and effort and skill.
Yeah. I think it's a government initiative, isn't it? To, you know, they've had a certain amount of the, of their constituency going, well, what are you doing about the environment? Or, you know, what are you doing about global warming? And, oh, well, we've got this green stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we've got this in place, and everybody's got to comply to this, but not really policing it, or, you know, not really delivering it in an effective sort of a manner. So
I took the LEED course before I left Michigan 15 years ago. This was back in the days when LEED was early days, right? Version 2. Mm. And I remember I really was passionate about it then. It was at Herman Miller's headquarters in Holland, Michigan, where we were all, like, in these workshop groups. And you had architects there, engineers. You get into a group, and they get to do these example projects using the LEED model. Mm-hmm. And you get all this brainstorming happening, like these great ideas coming out. All mock, it's all simulation. But I'm like, man, this is brilliant. I love this. This is exactly what we should be doing. Mm. So back then, I was young and naive, thinking, this is brilliant. I want to be involved in this. I believe in this. Mm. And then I, you know, long story short, I end up in Australia. I look at Green Star, and I get thrown a few Green Star projects here, and I've got my eyes wide open. I'm really excited. And then I see the reality of
cost,
the business side of it and the marketing side of it, and it's not actually green. Mm. There's more, it's ego play. It's very disheartening. Mm. That's not what I experienced in that Herman Miller office. Mm. That camaraderie, that teamwork, trying to do the right thing. Mm. Mm. You know? Mm.
And that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that's what humanity really generally should be about, you know, is trying to do the right thing, you know, and do good by everybody. You know, that's what every religious book has ever sort of preached, isn't it? You know, so.
And,
but I think we're getting a little bit lost from that, aren't we?
And it's no one's fault in the mix, I don't think. It's just the system that we're in. It's kind of hard to...
It's just a spiral effect. Yeah. You know?
I've used the word toxic. I don't know if that's too strong of a word, but...
It's certainly heading in that direction.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, the human moment. Do you have any examples of a human moment you've experienced recently? I've had a couple, but...
Yeah. More recently, I think, you know, when we were carrying out the New Perth Stadium project, which you are more than familiar with, you helped us out with a lot of design calculations and so on that project. Mm. But our site manager, our senior site manager, got some devastating news. His wife was diagnosed with a heart condition.
Oh, no.
Mm. Quite serious heart condition. So that was quite quickly. Obviously, he rang me and gave me the news that morning, and he's the one that would usually communicate everything to the site team. So I let the site team know what was going on.
Oh no.
A couple of hours later, the guys came back to my office, and they had done a whip around the whole site.
Oh yeah.
And raised funds to help him and his family in their time of need.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Yeah, and I thought, that's what it's all about.
Yeah,
that's what I want it to be. And it's still there. That's still there in our industry.
Yeah, at the human level, it's still there, right? Everything above and beyond contractual.
That's what we need to see more of.
We want to see more of that. Yeah, because that happened to me the other day. Did I tell you this over the phone? I went for a bike ride last weekend. I hadn't gone since before Christmas because I'd injured my intercostal. Kids, it's busy. And perfect day, I'm going to get out. My wife said, yeah, go for it. And then 2 hours in, I punctured my tire down Hepburn Ave.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, bloody hell, I was on a good pace. I'm heading back. I was also fasting the entire day, so I hadn't eaten.
Mm-hmm.
So I was gearing up. I was already thinking, what am I going to cook? I'm ready for the night. Sunday night, have a good rest. And then popped my tire, and I'm like, oh, bloody hell. And I wasn't prepared. I didn't have a backup tube, so my own fault,
mm-hmm.
right? And I called Bike Force.
I'm surprised at you, Jeff.
Yeah, I know. <Planning. laughs> I know. But I called Bike Force because they were closing at 5. I said, oh, yeah, I'm just up the road. Are you open? If I get there last minute, could you repair for me quickly?
Mm-hmm.
Just to give them a heads up. Again, I called them. I didn't email them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they said, yeah, come on. If you can get here by 5, that's great. We'll help you out. And then I tried pumping it, and, sometimes it might have been a minor puncture, and I could get a bit in there. Mm-hmm. It's only 3Ks away.
Yeah.
Pumped up, and then nothing. There's no chance. So I'm like, oh, I have to call my wife, come down with the kids to take me there. She's getting school lunches prepared, getting ready. I'm like, oh, I feel like an idiot.
Disrupts your whole...
It disrupts the whole thing. But then... I'm waiting there, just standing at Hepburn, and this truck pulls up with a Bike Force logo on it. I'm like, oh, that's a coincidence. And then I walk up to him. I said, oh, hey, what? He said, are you Jeff? I'm like, yeah, that's me. I just thought it was a coincidence, some Bike Force guy pulling up.
Mm.
And he said he was driving around to find me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I was like, I was so grateful. I'm like, really grateful. I'm like, holy crap, this is I'm like, really thankful for coming to get me. And
yeah.
And I didn't really give him exact location either, which was interesting. I said, I'm over here at Hepburn.
Yeah.
He found me.
Mm. So he's obviously been in the shop, put down the phone and after that phone call and thought, just go and get this guy.
And I'm like, great. That is bloody brilliant.
Just off his own, back. Yeah.
So I've got to pay that forward.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, awesome. And that was brilliant. Thanks for coming down.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I very much appreciate it. And yeah, we'll go from there.
That was great. Thanks to Frank for giving us his insight and thoughts on the topic of scope and accountability in AEC. Refer the links in the podcast notes to contact either Frank or myself. Please click to subscribe to enjoy future Bob podcasts. And let's inspire positive change in the places we live by giving voice to the AEC industry together for our army of change. Thank you.